Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by mirthful Max Montana. Yeah, I almost went with moist Max Montana.
Not sure if anyone needs to hear that.
Should we just start over again? I'm sorry, everyone.
Just redo it.
Who's watching or listening. And our special guest today, Mr. Garrett Blevins. Garrett, how you doing?
Doing well.
Today's episode is brought to you by Pressing and Blessing. It's a lifestyle.
That's right. Indeed.
And Garrett, let's, for our viewers and listeners who don't know you, get into a little bit of your athletic background, kind of how you found powerlifting and some of your accomplishments in the sport.
Sure. So I started lifting, as many people do, in high school. I was training for football at that time. In my years of training, I seemed to just get stronger much faster than a lot of the other players that I was with.
Humble brag.
Yeah, well, I started. It was not pretty at the start. So I didn't try
as hard as them either.
Just kind of happened.
I think I started let's take bench as an example. I think I started around 135 as my max when I came in, first time ever, like, picking up a barbell.
I mean, 2 years to get there.
155, so. Yeah. Well, there you go. So this was only at like 165 pounds, mind you, Chad. So
I was 175.
So, but each year I was able to basically
get the Wilkes calculator out.
Yeah. All right. I apologize.
Put that Wilkes, like the Wilkes score flashing on here.
So put on about a plate a year with bench, and the rest of the people were training. Maybe they put on like another 50
pounds. How many years ago was that?
This was in high school. So I went from 135 to 225.
So you benched like 255 now?
No, I wish that stopped in high school after I destroyed my shoulders and had to have a surgery, basically. I was doing a lot of daily maxing bro stuff. I would just max on bench twice a week, every week, all the time. To the point where I got so bound up, like I wouldn't touch my chest. It was like that inch. I was doing Spoto presses before they were anything. And they worked really well. I did bench, I think, with some like terrible football bench, 425, my senior year of high.
Because your shoulders hurt too much for you to touch your chest?
Well, it was because I was also doing that stupid thing called like Olympic lifting or weightlifting. Yeah, so my best numbers in that, I did compete. Bergner, in fact, I'm sure you know, I trained in his garage in Bonzel for a while. So my best snatch was 245. In pounds. I don't know what that is, kilos, 100.
They don't measure that low.
Yeah, so anyways. And then for the clean, I could clean 365, but I couldn't jerk it. I think it was 315 for that in high school. So they were okay numbers. Yeah.
111,
yeah.
143?
Yeah. At 165?
No, at that time I would have been 200. They're not great numbers.
Oh, let's just move on.
Yeah. I didn't have a second pull. They didn't teach me the second pull, though. I was only like, just go, and that was it. There was no second pull at that time.
Been there.
Yeah, and also had no shoulder mobility, so I don't know how I was catching. It's also why I had a labrum surgery in my right shoulder at 19 years old.
From benching and lifting?
From the snatch more than the other stuff, and doing so incorrectly. I mean, just basically catching it in an awful way over and over again.
I was going to say, if you would have grown up in Florida, you'd have been golden, because they do high school powerlifting there is bench press and clean and jerk.
Mm. Yeah. So
it would have been
fun times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are my best lifts. Squat in high school coming out, I think I was maybe 550 squat coming out of high school.
That's solid.
And we didn't really deadlift at that time.
Yeah.
And
where'd you grow up?
San Diego.
Oh, okay.
Always all San Diego. I went to high school in Mira Mesa and still in San Diego now. And so that's where that was happening. Went to San Diego State for 2 years as a walk-on, trained there and did some more. But after that, I took some time off, left kind of football, left lifting, went another direction with ministry work, learning ancient languages and reading the Bible every day and all that good stuff. And
like
went away
Dan
from the
Brown.
Lifting.
Just to play this game on screen real quick, but when you were playing football at San Diego State, do you know Miles Burris?
Name does not ring a bell.
Okay, how old are you?
Though I have very little memory of that time. That was in 06. 06, 07 is when I was there. It may have overlapped.
No, he would have graduated 2011.
Okay.
Really good linebacker.
Yeah.
Playing the NFL.
Okay, good.
Well,
if he's not a power lifter at this point, it's not important, right? We got to keep the focus, Chad.
I hope you enjoyed the game of Do You Know This Person?
at which I lost.
So that you go back to school, go into ministry work, and now
become a powerlifter. So I got married at 20. Wife was 18. This was my sophomore year of college. So at that point, I had to get a job at night. I started working in graveyards with a security firm. And
at graveyards?
Graveyard security. That would have been a good name. I think we need graveyard security. That may already exist. If it doesn't, I'm patent pending. I'm going to make some money on that. It's an official podcast. Of course
it's official. You declare it. It's official.
I declare bankruptcy. That's right. So there was about 2 or 3 years where I lost all track of time, space, myself, and was living in the nebulous world of graveyards, and then came back to training after that. Doing West Side, there was a random guy in a gym that I went to.
I thought you said you came back to training.
I came back to training and a West Side method, sir. I had my bands, and it was bench only, and I was looking at the records that time, and I was like, you know, the bench record's like only like 450 pounds. And I think it was probably actually at 450 kilos, and it was in a bench shirt because I didn't know how to read the powerlifting records. I was like, I think I can take that. I didn't know about gear. I didn't know about any of that stuff. So started back bench only for about a year and a half, and then I don't know who it was. It would be either Mark Bell, maybe you, maybe somebody else, but it was back early before powerlifting had starting to take off. And they said, if you don't compete in a full meet, you're not a powerlifter. Back when that was a big argument.
That sounds maybe more like a Dave Tatey.
Yeah,
it could have been. It may have been in that. So I took that to heart, and I said, okay, I guess I'm going to start squatting again. And I did. And I was doing seated good mornings with chains, and I was just pulling
Your squat just took off.
Oh, it definitely did. Yeah, right off the bench into a full stand as I'm doing my box squats. So, yeah, but that was how I got back into it. And since then have learned a little bit more and started to train more regularly for raw lifting only at this time since probably 2013, 2014.
Yeah. And you can continue your humble brags.
Yeah, that's right.
Part of things.
But well, let's get to the records. Let's get to the IPF records that I was a holder, past tense. All of my records have been taken from me, but I held them and they're in the books. And I passed all my tests. So
do you have a certificate to verify this?
They didn't send me a certificate. I'm actually pretty burned on
that. Well, I'm not really sure if I can
make myself a more official certificate than any certificate you have.
Do you have any crayons over there?
We got a marker here, Chad.
Get this guy an IPF World Record certificate.
Here,
how many world records did you have?
I took the squat, the bench, and the total at the Arnold last year. All three in the same meet. I hit it 2 weeks before Christoph Wiersbecki was going to be competing, at which I knew he would top the total. And I didn't even make a run. The deadlift was never going to happen.
Max actually broke 42 world records at his first powerlifting
meet. This weekend.
So.
I got a powerlifting meet this weekend.
Got it. That's in that federation that you created just for you. Have to be Max Montana to compete in it.
Yeah. Why would I let anyone else in?
Have to be exactly your age.
There's no videos of the squats. Okay. No videos are allowed. Because you can't judge depth from video or reality.
Yeah.
Chad and I determined that last night.
We believe you.
But, all right. So IPF world record, bench.
Squat, bench, total.
And total.
Squat first, man.
Squat, bench, and total. That's pretty good.
It was all right. I knew it was not as good as I wanted it to be, though. Even with that prep, things went pretty well at the meet. But no hate. I'm not trying to hate on any of the other 105s, but I think our class is lagging as far as the total. You look at Dennis Cornelius, and you look at what some of the 205s have done at various points, and the 105s need to go further than they are now. So even though, I mean, they're not people, there wasn't anyone squatting 730 at that time. There weren't really even that many 700-plus squatters in the 105s. I think two or three have showed up since then. But it needs to be closer to 8, long story short. I mean, that's where my mind is that the 105s, in my opinion, should have 800-pound squat, 550 bench and an 825-ish pull in one person in one meet. I think those are reasonable numbers to have.
Straight from the humble bag, right to the call out.
I got a long way to go to that 825 deadlift. So that may never happen. We'll see.
And then
if I could learn to hook grip, maybe that might be the secret.
And you competed at Worlds.
That's true. Yeah. So year? I made it as the alternate. I like to finish second. I think I'm going to be making a run for the record of second place finishes at
Garrett
Nationals.
Garrett Blevins, the Buffalo Bills of the USAPL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. So I lost to first Nationals. I almost bombed. I drove like 40 hours from San Diego to Colorado. And I was like, oh, I'll give myself 2 days of rest. I'll be fine. No, that was not true. I made my opening score. I think I went four for nine.
That took you 40 hours.
I went with my wife and we took like a scenic route. No, we didn't go like the fastest route. We're like, how many states can we drive through on our way there and enjoy ourselves? And we did enjoy ourselves.
Tennessee is pretty cool. I'm going to swing back to Colorado now.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was pretty bad. That was before I knew some of the things I know now. But almost bombed out. That's back when.
Maps,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, we didn't have smartphones either. This, I think, we printed a sheet of paper and we were going off of like a Google Map printout.
Honey, open up page 700 of the Thomas Guide.
Yeah, that's right. We had one of those in the back in case we got lost.
The kids watching this, they don't even know what a Thomas Guide is.
No.
They don't know that.
They don't even know what a spiral map. They don't even know what a map is.
No, they couldn't read those.
The kids.
You got to be cool to read those.
Yeah.
So
the problem was you pulled out of your driveway and you went left. You're supposed to go right and you just kept going.
Whoops.
Yeah, like, whoops.
Shit.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, I think the blue on the map is land.
Yeah. So anyways, Nick Tailuki won that year. I think I came in fifth. And the next year I came back much better prepared and lost to Eli by 2.5 kilos. Beat on the last deadlift.
That one in Scranton, 2015 Nationals, that was like, there was such a tight grouping of 105s on the entry totals. And I don't, at least for me, and I don't, admittedly, especially at that time, follow along as closely with the men's lifting in the USAPL. But I think people were kind of like, Eli Burks, who is this guy?
And yeah, I knew. When I was ahead, we were most worried about Tailuki. And he was really the person I was going there to beat that year. But when we came in to the subtotal, I talked to Hanny Jazzarelli, TSA coach that I was working with and still work with now for a lot of my meets. And I said, hey, you need to watch out for Eli over there. He's got a crazy deadlift, like 800 pounds. And Hanny really didn't know either. However, the year before, Eli had helped me out that Nationals. Really, he's one of the reasons I didn't bomb. He did like help me with all my warm-ups. Help me with the timing. So super cool, nice guy. Eli and I are friends. Yeah, I'm proud to call him a friend. He's a great guy. And he does everything he is doing as a medical doctor, also getting his pilot's license, and I think learning to play the piano right
James
now.
Dawn.
So ladies out there, if you are near Eli in whatever weird state, I think he's in South Dakota or something these days.
He's the only one.
He's definitely got that state record for sure. Like your records, yeah. Max. It's all like that records. Type of record.
They're all in states that no one lives in.
That's right. But so he helped me out, and then I warned Hanny, and then he pulled to beat me pretty easily. I think he had probably another 10 kilos that year. It was a conservative pull for him. So then we fast forward to next year. Eli's not coming. He's won Worlds, missing his final deadlift. He was still so far ahead.
Wow.
I don't know who was second. I know Bryce Krawczyk was in the group that year at Worlds, but he was not able to make it. He was doing some strongman and didn't have enough time off from his job. But then I got to lose to Bryce Lewis for the first time by the smallest of margins, 0.5 kilos. Also probably had a little bit more on his pole than I did, which leads us to the current year, this past October, where I lost to Bryce once more, but having taken the all-time world record at the Arnold, where Bryce was not, in between there, and also losing to him at Worlds in between there. So I've lost to Bryce 3 times now. It's starting to get bad. We used to be friends. I don't know about that anymore.
Yeah.
I might have to see if I can get Hanny to get a lead pipe or something. I hope he doesn't. He doesn't listen to this, right? No one listens to this. So
everyone listens.
I think
to
I'm
this.
Still safe.
Right. Well, now that you've heard about all the times that Garrett lost, we'll take a quick break for a Strength History Minute. When we come back, we're going to talk to Garrett about some of his ideas programming that get applied to his own programming, ideas that he applies to his athletes' programming, and peaking strategies, because he was really talking himself up as the best peaker of all time.
Certainly the best peaker in this room.
Yeah,
for sure.
So we'll take this break, and then we'll be back with Garrett Blevins. Pat Casey is one of the first great powerlifters in history. Many would refer to him as the godfather of powerlifting. He was the first man to bench 600 pounds, squat 800 pounds, and total 2,000 pounds, finishing with a PR bench press of 622 done in 1967. Casey was about 6 feet tall, 335 pounds, 152 kilos, truly a giant for this era. He was also the youngest person to ever bench over 400 pounds in competition, benching 420 at age 18. He trained out of the famous Red Paths gym in Los Angeles. Casey typically trained 4 times a week with very basic training, very heavy lockout work in the bench press,
paired with very heavy dumbbell pressing, including a best of 220-pound dumbbells for 6 reps. He later had a second higher volume session during the week, and one of his favorite exercises there were weighted dips. He did occasionally go heavy there with a best of 380 pounds hanging from his waist.
And we are back from the Strength History Minute, joined today by our guest, Garrett Blessings Blevins. And you do something that's very difficult to do. You balance being a very high-level athlete as well as a coach. And I've found that the two of those to be hard for me to balance at times. That's why I don't really lift weights anymore. Nah. Just kidding. I do once in a while. It's just not good enough to put on Instagram anymore.
And, you got to use those thick plates, right? If you put 500 on those bumpers, all about the bumpers. It's hashtag, more than anyone's ever lifted.
Chad, hashtag bumpers for likes.
Chad has an idea to make a barbell that held, you know, the big black high temp bumpers. To hold 900 plus pounds of high temp bumpers. So the bar would be like 20 feet long.
Yeah. CrossFitters. Or you could just make sure you can get your grip in about this close and pull it together.
So something we were talking about before we started recording that jumped out. Is you're saying for your own training, and as the former IPF world record holder in the squat, you were only squatting, 9 work sets, you think, during your peak?
Reps per week, yeah.
And reps per week.
It got bad. So let me back up a little bit and say this would have been the year before I lost to Bryce by 0.5 kilo. In the summer of that, my daughter...
We'll just use all... The first loss to Bryce.
Let's just stick to first. Bryce's first win. Can we phrase it that way? Let's be more positive here. Let's try to be positive, people. Bryce's first win against me. So in that year leading up to it, I was about ready to hang up powerlifting altogether. My daughter had been born earlier in the year, and my estimated maxes were like 88% of what I had done at Nationals that last year. And I had been training regularly throughout that entire time. It wasn't like I took a deload or I'd taken time off of training. Everything was just awful. Every workout was horrible. I didn't want to work out. Everything felt heavy. And I was about to hang it up. Hanny luckily told me, hey, just go to a local meet, have fun, just take what's there and we'll see what happens and base Nationals off that. I set PRs in all of my lifts at that meet because I started to train based off of RPE. Up until that point, I had been pretty regimented about having numbers set and training. Mm-hmm. And adhering to those, maybe dropping some volume here and there, but basically doing what the plan was written as. I started at that point, I took my squatting frequency down to 3 times a week, or from 3 times a week to like once a week. And that was it. And it was very minimal. Maybe have a day where I did high bar squats with like 315. And this is again for me when I'm squatting almost 700. And I would do like 3 sets of 5 at 315. And that would kill me. I would be like gassed and out of energy at that point. So I could have one day of low bar squatting that was sort of legitimate where I'd work up to a single and maybe 1 or 2 sets of triples after that with like 2 plates stripped off. So going from maybe like 655 down to like 515 for the triples, massive drops. And those 515 reps would be hard. And I would just increase that top single by 10 pounds each week. This is not a peaking strategy for anyone out there listening. I'm not telling you what to do because this is awful, just so you know. So I would maybe start the jumping point off like 8 weeks out and do 615 for that top single, drop down to 455. Next week I'd do 635 for the single, drop down to 515. Next week I would go to 655 and so on until I got up to about 95%. And that was my peaking strategy. And again, this is like 8 weeks of this, similar work on the bench, but maybe a little bit higher back off volume afterwards and a second day. But I'm talking 2 times a week bench frequency. Deadlift would mirror the squatting that I just told you exactly. Terrible peaking strategy. 8 weeks of the year, 2 months of that leading into each meet. The good part of that was it helped me release the fatigue and deal with the life stuff that I was dealing with, which is what your question is really about. How do you have a kid? I have a full-time job. I'm also coaching, running a business. At that time, I was also working in a part-time position at the church, and I'm still trying to train and produce some sort of content for the lifting community out there. Too many things. One, I would say, you've got to sleep. You can't speed up your recovery in some way that's just going to accommodate for that. But if I'm trying to peak 4 times a year and the peak is 2 months long, I've got eight months of this insanely low volume fairly high intensity by the end of it training with no building or developmental blocks between it. And basically that ran me into the last, into Worlds, which I didn't know I was going to until I got pulled up from the alternates list this last summer, and then had a 12-week turnaround to Nationals this year. Bryce's second win against, third actually, because he beat me at Worlds. And so that has been my training strategy to deal with life, which has been highly auto-regulated and extremely low volume and unsustainable.
You have another kid on the way too. So
number two in like a month.
Less volume.
Yeah, no volume. I think actually, yeah, if I just sit on the couch, I should get stronger by this logic. You know, add one kid, that's going to be that general stress, you know, that, that causes that adaptation. Maybe I'll carry both children at the same time. That'll be about it. Go for walks. I think that should put my total up about 5%. So Bryce will have to step it up to beat me this year.
Isometric bicep holds.
I'll say that's gotten a lot better. When I was first trying to hold my daughter, it was like the hardest thing. Like 3 or 4 minutes in, I was done. And she's like 5 pounds or whatever, 6 pounds. Wow. I could not do it. I'm definitely way better. I can go for hours now holding her, and she's like 25 pounds or whatever. So that certainly has gotten better. It has not helped my total at all. Biceps are not that important, right? Or maybe they're the most important. Depends on who you ask.
So you're talking about your very bad peaking, like, you know, saying...
Yeah, bad little... if you were to apply it as a normal, healthy, regular stress in your life, unmarried, maybe not even dating somebody, intermediate lifter. No one should run what I just did. I was forced into that situation by external circumstances. But at least I was smart enough to know I had to change the way I train, auto-regulate, and adjust my volume based on what was going on in my life. But I also realized that I'm not going to be able to develop a new peak. Basically, I have been peaking over and over again off of the same physique, the same body, and the same level of training, which is why I've made very incremental. And then at this last Nationals, my squat went down 8 pounds or whatever, which was amazing that it was that at all.
Yeah,
I could barely triple 575 9 weeks out and then squatted 722. Again, part of that was because I went to physical therapy twice a week for 8 weeks leading up to Nationals because I couldn't squat at all without horrible pain in my hips. But it's not a good training strategy. It doesn't tend towards longevity. And as we were talking a little bit before the show, if you're going to make the most progress, you're going to do so with the longest career. It's going to outstrip any one great training cycle because you're going to have more opportunities for great training cycles and progress if you're training for a longer period of time. There might be other ways where you could get stronger at a faster rate, but is that your goal? Is your goal to, in 2 years, I want to be as strong as I can possibly be and then not lift anymore? Or do you want to lift for the next 20 years? Even a very moderate increase over that period of time can make a substantial difference at the end.
I think it's funny because sometimes I tell people, I like to frame things a little differently and say, hey, imagine that there's a number that you're going to hit as your career peak. Let's say that's whatever, 2,000 pound total or something. That's the most you're ever going to do, some number like that. And then that's the end of your career because that's the peak. That's the top. Backtrack from there to where you are now and look at this amount of time between these two points and think about how little progress you really need to make on a consistent basis to get there versus I think this idea that people think, oh, if I hit that peak, if I can do a 2000 total and I do it as fast as possible, then I get either the situation where I get to do a 2000 total at 100 meets, which isn't going to happen, or I'm going to hit that and then I can go above that. And so people don't seem to think that, like, yeah, there's probably a limit to what you can do. And if you have some reasonable goal, like I believe I can make these numbers and look at that as the end of your peak, the end of your career, then filling in the space between that with moderate amount of progress repeated many, many times without injury, if possible, is going to produce a really, you know, you'll actually achieve that. You'll probably exceed that result in the end because you were, you know,
you're training moderate. More intelligently, right. You're going to have less setbacks. It's a good thought project. I mean, the critique people will give you on that is, oh, well, you're setting limits on yourself. And no. You're setting limits that are functional. As you train with that methodology, when you train with that goal in mind, like you said, you may meet and then you can reassess. Like, you don't have to stop. Oh, I reached my imaginary 2,000 pound total too soon. Guess I'm done. Like, no one's going to do that. But it keeps you from making some of the stupid decisions that you'll see that can end your career or at least shorten your career.
Yeah.
I even did that at this last Nationals. So people will know, you know, I like passed out after my deadlift. So that was that. Yeah, that was a weird. That was a weird.
Let's play that video on a loop a few times.
Yeah, dance moves. If we could slow it down and zoom in on my face. Yeah. So this was definitely. It was a weird lift, but one of the reasons why I think I was straining so hard and got to that point, probably with blood pressure, I'm assuming, because I didn't black out. I was still able to see, but it's like when you spin around in a circle or whatever as a kid, or you know, I was doing this earlier this day, so some people still do it. But when the room, when you stop, but the room keeps turning and you're just, your equilibrium is messed up, that's what I had. And that's why I tried to put my hand out into the wall to stop myself, but I just could not stop. I don't know if it's because when I let I don't know if my grip stopped working because I was losing consciousness, or because I did that, my head snapped back and my brain jiggled. I don't think it was fast enough to do that. Eli, the medical doctor, did not think that it was a concussion as he assessed me afterwards, but maybe he was just trying to kill me. I don't know. So anyways, it messed with me for about a month afterwards, even up to now where straining,
you were telling
it's
me
like punch drunk almost. Yeah. It's like, it still got me a little bit. It's definitely getting better, which I'm happy about.
Yeah. Garrett rolled in here in a wheelchair, actually.
Correct. I'm still in the wheelchair.
Incapable of walking. Look at that. Walker Bradshaw and Max Hayden.
Is it your second or your third?
It's third.
Third.
No, we were 8-for-8 going into the end. Yeah. We were all pulling for position. It should be right at the end. I think I was second to last, or third to last.
Yeah.
This looks like the guy. Let's just walk us through this.
Yeah.
So feels good. Oh, I'm going to make the lift. Usually I say weird stuff like this all day. Though, right here. There we go.
Theatrics.
And then they take the camera off me. This is my moment. I've been training for months to be on the platform. And then they take the camera off me. You know, like I don't even matter.
You look like a guy who got shot in a 1950s movie, like Western movie. Like, oh.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. Maybe it was a sniper.
Yeah.
Here's Benny Ben. Yeah, I think, did Ben pull before? He did pull before.
He did
before
a double
me,
with which that, is a, actually. Then he went in the back. And
then 10 for 10, yeah, with 771. They pulled that because he couldn't move up another placement. It was going to be past what they thought he could do. I think he actually could have done it. He pulled 771 or 777 in the back.
What, did he place third?
Fifth, I think. Fifth. I was third, man. Come on. I get on the podium.
Second. Who got Eli?
Oh, I did get second. Look how dumb I am. Eli got third. I was just too used to losing.
He did pass out, so
yeah.
Who knows
what
you remembered after this.
Yeah, that's right. So,
but Hani looks very disappointed in that. Oh, no, sorry, this is before that.
Well, he was mad because my grip is never my issue. I usually stand up there, I say all day or other weird things when I finish my deadlifts and stand there with it. Grip is I've never lost a deadlift on grip like this.
So,
So this was weird. I don't know why that happened. Which would also have been a 20-pound meet PR, just to throw in there, that I had to pull this to...
Your best ever is 7:30 in a meet?
This thing is 7:28 or whatever. Yeah, it was a massive way outside
right there,
what
right
should
here.
Have been there.
Get shot by the sheriff.
Oh.
The drama was... That's an incredible fall. Probably the best I've ever seen.
It was a nice one. Where's the person... Where's the back spotter?
They don't have that in the USAPL.
I've seen it at some point. I've seen it before.
I think
too.
A lot of times it's just the guy who's working the jack will kind of stand back there.
Yeah.
But
well, at least the jack wasn't still back there.
Oh, and that would have been
just bail myself.
That would have really added some extra drama to this.
Yeah.
What,
so
what kind of things can we? What kind of scenarios can we Photoshop this video of Garrett into?
I think if you can green screen everything, get everything behind him out, and just have him, and we put it up on the site.
I think a John Cena coming in from the side could be on this for sure. I think we could get this.
Can we
work on
that? Maybe get him with some sort of Grand Canyon setting.
Disappears in the background.
John Cena in a cowboy hat, you know?
Put him
Clint
on a surf.
Can
put
come
him on
in
a...
from the side and shoot me as John takes me down with the elbow. It's all good. But yeah, but the reason that happened anyways was because I was almost dead from the squat. The squat was the worst squat I've ever done. You said, I think, to me, nice squat, and I turned to you and I said, no. Yeah. It was awful, which it was.
Well, I just tried to be nice.
He was trying to be nice.
That's
the
nicest thing.
Yeah, sabotage is more like it. Trying to tell me, oh, that's exactly what a squat should look like. You've nailed your form.
Try to do that every time.
Yeah, squat only on your right leg for the bottom third of the lift, and then shift over to both and finish it.
Yeah.
While
right
rounding
leg
your
for
lower
your opener,
back.
Left leg for your second, and both for your third.
Yeah, there. See?
Standard strategy.
That's right. Yeah, I've seen this video from you. So, So it was terrible. It was a painful meet. It hurt. It was also the most fun I've had at a meet. I was basically what I would call...
Well, you were wasted, clearly.
Basically, I was. Yeah, at the end, I was done. I laid it all out there. But the point of this is that I should never compete like that again. that whole thing, I rolled the dice and got lucky and didn't get horribly injured, slip a disc, have something that put me out for another year or two before I could come back and repeat that performance. Basically luck, yeah. Which I'm thankful for. It's either luck or God. I'll say it's God. Y'all can say it's luck. We can agree to disagree. But for whatever reason, I'm still here and able to lift. And that is not a smart decision for my longevity. People will say, you know, oh, you should never go 9 for 9. You should go, you know, 7 for 9. That's how you know you pushed it and you went. I hear that. And I'm like, no, that is not a good meat strategy. But it's also not a good career strategy. Yeah. Because if you are failing lifts, you are exponentially increasing the possibility of injury. And while there's always an injury risk with powerlifting as we're pushing ourselves, I would rather train and be able to go and give 98% and win than have to go and give 100%. I think about Milanichev's squats. And dude's almost never going 100%. It looks like he's breezing through, or he'll miss and there's something off with his peak or anything. With those weights, any little mistake can put you out.
I kind of think of him missing one time, this last big
day. That's what I'm referring to. Up until that point, it looked like he always had, another 20 or 30 kilos or something. It was just cake.
Yeah.
And I've seen him, he's missed some deadlifts. I think maybe more with the squat, this is true. The deadlift you can bail out of and usually not pass out. But with the squat, it's a little bit more different. There you go. So,
maybe we get like a pirate ship with a plank.
Oh, that's a good one. Situation. Yeah, pirate ship plank. What about that video where like it freezes and all the music plays and like goes into outer space? That'd be a cool one too.
There we go. Yeah.
So, what would you recommend then if that's not ideal?
He's tethered to the space station.
A gravity sort of scenario.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So if that's a terrible strategy, then what do you can you give an example of what you would do or what your ideal scenario, or maybe what you're doing now?
An RPE 10 that's not an all out grinder. Like there's a range of RPE 10s that you can have. There's the RPE 10 where it's like you did not have another rep, but it still moved well. There was definitely slowing. You were having to strain to move through the lift, but you didn't have form breakdown in very particular areas, such as like you might have a little knee valgus, but your lower back didn't round. For me, on the third squat that I had, my lower back rounded substantially. I do not know how the bar did not dip down during that time, but my back, as I stalled and went from my right leg to my left leg, was actively curling during that time. And then I round back good morning to the rest of the squat once I got over to my left leg.
Good thing you West side.
Yeah, west side. All those, you know, you're those welcome. 4 years before maxing out on chain suspended good mornings.
It's called the delayed transformation effect.
That's right. I've been planning this actually.
4 years.
And I'm sabotaging everyone else who would recreate my plan. Yep. I know that that's not going to be sustainable. So for me, I need to readjust the way I think about competing, because even if my 98% or my 99% at nationals this year is less than what I did, I can do that 99 or 98% at a meet for the next 10 years and not risk the injury that I risked with this.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not how I'm going to beat Bryce. I'm not going to beat him next year or the year after that. But when he gets so old that he jumps into the master's class before I do, I think I might be able to take the open. No, but that's the way I think about things now. And maybe it's because I have kids. Maybe it's because I'm getting older. I'm going to be 30 this year. And I just have a different mindset where I want to keep lifting. When you talked about having that, if there was a ceiling and you could know it, let's just say you're rubbing the lamp, the genie comes out, your wish is, I want to know the highest total I get. And the genie tells you and you're like, okay, you can have that next year. Or you can have that 15 years from now. I would much rather have it 15 years from now. Yeah. And that may sound weird, but that's when you say, I'm like, oh yeah, I'd rather enjoy my training for a much longer period, make slow, sustained progress, rather than have it all now and then nothing else ever again.
Yeah.
And I think other people have a different view on that. And that's fine. If other people have a different view and they want it right now and then they can go do something else, great. But I actually enjoy training. And so I'd like it not to be over.
Does your business have any New Year's resolutions? Here's an important one every business should consider. Make your hiring process more efficient and effective this year. Let ZipRecruiter help. No one has done a better job of transforming how you find the right talent than they have. ZipRecruiter posts your jobs to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you, it finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife.
It might surprise you.
6 months dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, welcome back to Jug Life, folks.
Just sharing the secrets here, you know. Continue, Max. I think your audience is very interested in this.
All right. So we are back with Garrett Blevins. Something that we were talking about off screen earlier was so the way that Garrett utilizes exercise variation with his clients, and the little bit we heard about it, and that if we always try and stop talking about the interesting training things off camera, or at least I try and stop us from doing that. So I didn't really get into it too much, but it sounded like quite a bit different way than Max and I do. So let's say specifically for the squat, maybe some ways that you manipulate variation through an athlete's training plan.
Definitely. So with the clients that I work with, we'll have various phases. We usually use a month as our kind of our phasic structure block because people kind of are used to training in months. It just kind of defaults that way. It could be different, but the same thing as using 7 day week as your rotation and not every other day and doing some weird thing where it lines up every 21 days or something. So anyways, what I would do usually when we're furthest away from a test or from a meet, we're going to have a little bit higher variation than the exercise. Now, by variation, I usually am going still with barbell movements. I may, for a low bar squatter who has issues keeping their hips underneath them and has seemingly a stronger back and weaker quads, safety squat bar work, specifically where they're keeping their knees forward the entire time. Or if they can front squat and they don't have access, then they could do that. Then we would move in maybe in the next month, we'd have some high bar work in there, but we would also have low bar work coming back. And the closer we would get to a test, the more low bar work we would have, the less exercise variation we would have. And that would change maybe from a 30-70 split to a 70-30 to a 100% competition specific as we're getting very close, maybe within two blocks away from the most important singles test. However, I'll usually, if we're talking about a 6 week training or a 6 block training cycle, 24 weeks, we'll usually have some sort of test midway to see how things are going and make some adjustments off of that, which is usually a triples test. I think that's close enough to give me a good estimate without having to go all the way in and needing to really work on singles to display it. And so on a block like that, I might still have a 60-40 split of low bar to variation when I'm getting into the singles in preparation for a meet or a singles test. It's going to be almost 100% specific exercise, maybe with something like low bar pause, and then low bar higher rep sort of thing.
Well, I lied when I said it was much
different. Much different. It is exactly the same. I'm not telling you what I really do, Chad. I just want you to like me. Come on.
I do like the idea that you
had. Good job. You did it right.
Woo! Yeah. No, I did read Scientific Principles Strength Training cover to cover as soon as it came out.
It's
kind of
funny.
I jumped on that
thing. The last chapter. So.
Yeah, I realized that it was basically all Mike Ishratel, but that you liked what he had to say. And I think there's a lot of good in that. And again, the recommendations in there for building your program, I mean, the volume, low end to high end, if you went, would almost be double.
Yeah.
But you have to find where you're at in the middle. And you can't write one program for everybody.
And that's we're just trying to give people, inform them of their best starting guess.
Yeah.
Because there's no way in the format of a book to collect all of this necessary information about people's size and experience and strength and lifestyle and genetics.
Yeah. And prior training history. Like if they've been running marathons or they've been sitting on a couch, it's like that's going to change your maximum recoverable volume level. Just because of your general conditioning.
That's something that's kind of interesting that we were actually talking about earlier before the podcast, referring to maybe a stabilization of the amount of volume somebody does throughout their career.
Mm-hmm.
And you take somebody from the beginning and maybe their MRV is really high, intermediate lifter, their MRV is really high, they're doing a ton of work. And if that number is fluctuating a lot or they're changing the amount of volume they do relative to their MRV a lot, they're not going to have as stable a progress, and it's difficult to kind of keep track of how they make progress, or why things are going well or why they're not.
Yeah, was it that massive deload or was that huge spike? What led to this?
And so constantly changing that rather than looking at MRV as a here's a guideline. We know what I've done in the past. We're shooting to maintain this kind of sweet spot as to like, we know what like the most we can do. We know where we're going to make the most progress. And then trying to establish a stability in the volume you actually do in your training so that you can measure and predict results later, right?
Yeah, and I've found in my own training I've had the most success when I was more consistent and there was an easy to follow progression that's there. And whether that's through adding a set per week and then having a deload, or whether that was just very, very slowly increasing the weights with a set amount of sets, I can figure out what worked or what didn't work with that. Whereas if I'm undulating wildly on a widespread, I use a DUP format like I was describing. There's going to be higher and lower reps within the week, but it's going to be clustered. Mm-hmm. I try to keep it, if I'm using 10s, I don't want to go lower than 6s.
Right,
I don't want 10s and 2s together for sure. And I'd really like a 10-8-7 or something of that nature.
I think that's a really important thing where I see a lot of people who do DUP stuff make an error is too wide a variation within the same week. Yeah. You know, 3s on Monday, 12s or an AMRAP on Friday or Saturday, and that AMRAP goes out to 15 reps or something.
Sure, sure. It's just so different. Your body is not going to adapt well to that. Now, if you're just general training and you like to go to the gym and lift stuff without wanting to really get stronger, like go knock yourself out. Yeah, there's a lot of variation. That's fun.
If you don't have any real goal,
if you have aspirations.
I don't care how you don't reach your non-existent goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. So just so people know. But and again, if you're going to be doing speed work, we were talking about this off camera a little bit. I don't have a problem with speed work if it's for technical proficiency. Mm-hmm. If you're working on your form, if you want to maintain, let's say, knee position in the squat, for my, like using myself as an example, I've worked with a little bit faster speeds, making sure that I can hold my knee in a position, but with much lighter weights. But that is not making me stronger. That is simply helping me feel out and grease the groove for how my form ought to feel with heavier weights. And again, the speed isn't like this crazy dive bomb that's completely different than how I would lift a single in a competition. It has to be a fairly close speed, if not exactly that speed, and no faster than that.
Yeah. At least the same rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah, 135 like your max. That's your statement, isn't it? I'm stealing that from you.
Yeah, someone else had probably said it, but 135.
You said it twice. Like I think twice, and then it's yours, right? Okay.
I've said it now probably about 100 different seminars. So.
There you go. Yeah, and I think there's something to that with keeping that rhythm that you've got a maximum speed that's going to translate. Again, like the number of repetitions. If you're doing 15s and singles, well, if your descent to your squat takes 0.2 seconds, but in competition you're descending at 0.8 seconds. Like, that's a big variation. That's four times difference. So check my math on that.
Here's a question for you. Let's say you have a lifter who has, let's say, they have decent strength. Mm-hmm. The weights they're lifting are they're not struggling to improve their lifting because they're not strong enough. They have really bad technique, let's say. Mm-hmm. How do you actually go about approaching that? They're solving that problem with the structure of training or your actual training days?
That's where, one, I'll tell them to use less weight. And I'll have them, since I'm using mostly RPE in the training that I provide, there's percentages that are with it to give you a guess of where you should land, but I have people modulate by RPE. I would have them include technical breakdown as part of their RPE calculation. And so if you've got knee valgus on your squat, even if you're able to do rep after rep after rep, but your knees are like almost knocking together, that's an RPE 10 or really 11 because you had a technical failure, you need to use less weight. And what I tell them is you cannot progress with your weights until you can lift them correctly. Or at least, I think Mike Desheer uses like 80% correct, like it's passable. It doesn't have to be pristine perfect because I work with some people where they're stuck in that mindset. Everything has to be exactly correct. This toe has to be 13 degrees and all this other. And I'm just like, okay, you're overthinking it now. You're going to have some wiggle room with your form, but there are some things that shouldn't change. Your lower back shouldn't be rounding. Your knees shouldn't be noticeably going in as you come with the squat. Your hips shouldn't be shooting back. Your shin angle as you go down in the squat should be mirrored on the way up out of the squat. And so as long as those things are basically true, okay, we can continue to move up and we'll still work on improving those, but it's okay. But if I see somebody in every deadlift they have, immediately their back all the way through, not just upper back, but everything is rounding. Too heavy. You can't. You don't know how to hold your brace, and you're probably strong enough. You just don't know how to do it mentally. Back up, and you're going to be able to increase probably almost a linear progression of weights through as you get down to the point where you have proper form. because you're already strong enough to do it. You just need to learn how to do it, which oftentimes I find is the athlete thinking about it, not specifically, oh, your back's weak, so you need to hammer back exercises. Well, if when they're doing those exercises, they're committing the same form breakdown, that's not going to help them solve that. Thinking about the lift and doing it correctly is going to solve it.
And you got to be in the intensity ranges where you can actually think about
still what think, you're doing. Yeah, which is like, let's give 60 to 75.
Yeah, I was going to say like, reps. Yeah, I was going to say probably 60 to 80%. Maybe someone with a bad technique needs to go down to more 50 to 70, 50 to 75. Yeah. Someone with a good technique could be doing the majority of their work in 65 to 85. Female, smaller weight class, maybe up to 70 to 90.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And like that's where the majority of work is going to happen, and you can make all the reps look good. And, you know, to assign arbitrary weight numbers to that, let's say that's 300 to 350. You're doing the majority of the work there. You can squat 380. It might look kind of rough. So then you do a bunch of squats that look good in 300 to 350. And now you can squat 380 and it looks good. You can do 400 and it looks kind of rough. So now it becomes 315 to 365 that the majority of the work is done.
Yeah, which it does take some restraint on the athlete's part. They know that they're strong enough to successfully complete the lift, but the way in which they do that will undercut future gains. And again, we've talked about longevity already. I don't care if they can successfully lift it. I want them to become as strong as they possibly can be. That's why they've come to me as a coach. So I'm giving them that one step back, two steps forward sort of scenario. Because even if you're having a little bit, let's say you've got some posterior pelvic tilt in the bottom of the squat. Well, all right, you might not feel that this week or this month or this year or in the next 2 years. But 3 years from now, all of a sudden your SI joint is blown up on you every single workout and you don't know why. And it's because you've been having this little wiggle back and forth. Does that mean that we need to stop squatting until you mobilize for the next 3 months and get rid of it? No, but you should be aware of it and you should be moving towards improving that problem as we're lifting. And that's kind of how I deal with things. It's why form review is part of what I do in coaching. And I think if you're paying any amount, like substantial amount for coaching, and it's just a template, you should find somebody else that can help you with some of these things. Because you need a second pair of eyes to see these.
In regards to the technique review, or when you were up here a couple of weeks ago, you'd said something interesting about watching your squat and that you watch them in rewind.
Yeah. So when it's hard for me. I was even looking, this was last night I was recording, and when I played it through, they looked really good. But when I go back and I'm like, okay, let's just watch this in reverse and slow motion. Does my descent in reverse, which is my ascent, look right? And I can immediately tell when my hips have shot back and my knees have come in because as I'm descending in the squat, like I'm bringing my knees in and out. And I'm like, I would never do that on a descent. But that's what it looks like going up. If you play it in reverse, it is just easy.
I've done that before. I watched like Olympic lifting in reverse and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, just simply because it's like when you watch it and it's like a completely different, like, it's not what you expect.
Yeah.
It's almost like your brain is not just kind of like watching it and kind of extrapolating what should happen. So it kind of blends together as being like normal.
Yeah.
When you watch it in reverse, it's really weird. And so you pick up things. It's kind of funny.
And I usually see even people with nobody's back, as far as I think this is true, nobody's back is rounding in their lower back on the squat on the way down. It's on the way up out of the hole. That's where. And so if you see it on the way down, it's like the first movement of their squat going down is them rounding. And you're like, what the heck? It isn't obvious. But on the way up, sometimes you might miss something like that, especially if it's minor. I think you can really pull out the detail issues. At the same time, sometimes that's just going to be part of your squat. Sometimes you can adjust your form to deal with it, but it's like, let's take Bryce Lewis, my nemesis again. Let's pick on him. His knees will kind of do this bounce at the bottom of almost every squat that he does. And he's had some injuries here and there, but it seems to work for him. And he squats extremely well. He's lifting at the highest level and he's continuing his training through. Is he aware of that issue? I'm sure he is. He's a very technically proficient guy, but he's not going to stop squatting and do a bunch of hip abduction in a machine until he can squat correctly. And again, that's where it doesn't have to be all one or the other, but you ought to be aware and you ought to be moving towards a resolution to those issues.
I think that's where Prilipin's chart is really crucial. And really what Prilipin's chart is doing or says is that we're selecting, here's an intensity you're going to train with. This is the low, middle, and high ranges of repetitions you can execute with good form there, where there's actually going to be a positive transfer of technical skills. So if you're at 80% doing more than three reps there, even though most anybody could do that, it's going to be a negative effect on the technique afterward, right?
Yeah. Yeah. What are you, I said in a video recently, you are what you train.
Right.
So if you're training to failure and those last two or three reps of that set are terrible and the first three were good, what have you really accomplished as far as the totality of that set in your adaptation? Well, either you've reinforced no further good progress in your technique, or you've made it worse. And in the reps where you were straining and trying hard and probably the bar is moving at speeds it'll move in competition, you were doing that in compromised movement patterns. So I would argue, if anything, you're working against yourself there.
Yeah.
So instead of doing a set of five at RPE 10, why don't you do a set of three at RPE 8?
Yeah. And that's exactly what Shaco's programming is essentially based on. Segue into
What I'm working on now. Yeah, sure. So for those of you who don't know, it's not been widely publicized, but I'm working with Kaizen right now, which is Bart Kwan, Omar Isoff, and Mike Farr. They came together and have created a number of templates, instructional videos, and just written text documents that go along with their programs that people can sign up for. Somewhere in the realm, I think their template sales is like 25 or something a month, or it comes out something like that. But they recently flew Shaco out. Shaco, a lot of people will know the Shaco numbered templates, but as we were talking about earlier, these numbers correlate to individuals or to people who were training. I think one of them that's the most frequently used, it's one of the easier ones, is for a 15-year-old girl who was trying to increase her bench press. And yet, I don't know if it's like Shaco 28 or 27 or whatever it is.
Send me that program later.
Yeah, I know, just to kind of review. It actually probably is some crazy high volume, according to you guys. That'd probably be what it is. And it's just, these were programs written by Shaco not to be generally applicable templates or templates that build on each other. It's not like 31 comes after 30 as you get better. So I think this has bugged Shaco a little bit, as he's just been around and been misunderstood, and people will gain an idea of who he is based on these templates when it does not accurately represent his system. So Kaizen flew him out, Mike Ishratel was out here as well translating for him, and they worked together to create some templates that would accurately represent who Shaco is and to an intermediate audience. And so since that hits the majority of people that Kaizen works with, that's what they're offering. I'm currently running through the program because it correlates to a lot of the things I needed to work on, higher volume with moderate intensities. Mm-hmm. What I'll have to adjust is there's a test on the program I have about mid-cycle. I think it's like a 15 or 16-week lead-in to that test. I probably won't test and try to set a new max there because I'm not going to be able to set a new max there. I'll just make some changes and continue on with some volume. But it is focused around, like, it's not crazy high volume. It's definitely manageable intensities. I think the first week, the highest intensity was four sets of two at 80% with squat. Yeah. That's not a hard workout.
Yeah.
And so even if you have come off a competition and you're using those numbers and you're down off your peak, that's going to be a doable workout. I think in 3 weeks, the next time I go to 80% on squats, it'll be five sets of three. So it goes from four sets of two at 80 to five sets of three at 80. 3 or 3.5 weeks later, something like that. And it just kind of moves through and will slowly increase you to a test from there. Yeah. Again, that's not, I mean, what a single at RP 8, which a lot of people use in their training all the time, that'd be 90% probably.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. So you're not hitting 90% in this style of programming probably until the week of the test. I think maybe two or three times. Instead, you're ingraining those movement patterns with lower intensities for low repetition, so you're not going to failure with them, but repeated sets to ingrain that. And I know that in the Russian systems, form is very important. And as you watch their lifters in competition, you often see that borne out, where it looks like they're doing that 98-99% lift with great form, and they're not going all out. Except maybe on a deadlift. I've seen them miss more deadlifts than I have seen them miss squats. But that's kind of the system behind it. And I'm running it myself so I can understand it. There may be some coaching along with it, more than just the template and the instructions from Shaco.
Right.
Shaco has given his form of auto-regulation in a kind of a written form, so people who buy it will see how Shaco advises to adjust. I think I had the perspective, it's like the Russians are like, it's written, you're doing it no matter what.
No,
if your back pops out of your spine, it's not like that. It's like, oh no, if it's too heavy, go lighter. If it's too light, go heavier.
Yeah.
Don't change that too much. Stick to the plan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just use your head sort of stuff.
It's a really brilliant approach.
It's a very revolutionary,
like, deductive sort of reasoning to get there too, right? There's a lot of like elimination of what's really not going to be productive, and then just a focus on, hey, here's a very straightforward approach to develop technique, to accumulate volume, to be able to intensify it later, to have a system that's structured in a way that you can basically accomplish all the goals that need to be accomplished. It falls within all the principles of training, and it's just a very, you know, I would say moderate, straightforward approach. There's nothing radical about it.
Yeah, there's no gimmicky three tips to increase your total thing. And again, sometimes those may be based on sound principles. Sometimes they might not. Sure. Sometimes they may succeed in spite of themselves.
Yeah.
But the Russian system, as I've seen it, and I ran all the numbers and worked through it, it's moderate intensity throughout.
Yeah.
It seems sustainable week to week. There's no week where you're doing like four times the volume of another week. It's not crazy. It basically looks like as you move through the program, you should have about the same level of fatigue week to week.
Right.
And if you have a week that's tougher, it's immediately followed by a week that is easier to keep you at kind of a moderate level. So
very good. I think there's a lot of very, very useful information in there for people. If you enjoy the Jug Life podcast, please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny, like this person, Jay Gudenkoff, who wrote the Jug Life Journey, and then wrote us some song lyrics, which I'm tempted to sing. I was saying he wrote like, one day Jug will find you, break those
lack of
gains that bind you. And then there's more, but I'll only sing that part. So obviously
I was out of that shot, right? I think you had zoomed. Okay. As long, I don't want to be in the clip with this.
Garrett's just gone. The chair.
There is a wig here. I think I should have been hiding in at this point.
Obviously, Jay Gudenkoff, if you write song lyrics, you win something. So email me at chad@jtsstrength.com and we'll send you a t-shirt or something, because we very much appreciate people who put the extra effort into writing song lyrics. Sorry that you had to listen to that. Actually, I'm not sorry.
I'm actually just jealous.
I'm a fantastic singer, and everyone here knows it. Voice like a combination of Fergie and Jesus. You can find The Jug Life on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. So make sure you check it out, and we really do appreciate the reviews, and it helps us bump up the lists so more people can hear the good word of strength. If you enjoy our YouTube videos, which we're always very proud of, thanks to our man, Shorty Sedang, subscribe to the YouTube. Interested in coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, and super total, visit juggernautcoaching.com. Garrett, where can they find you, follow you, learn more about you?
So they can find, if they're interested in alternative coaching services, at they can find me at Garrett Blessings on the Grams, or Garrett Blevins on Facebook and YouTube. More on the Instagrams these days, so try to find me there. Hopefully to be on Twitch soon, so if you're interested in seeing some streaming workouts and following with kind of the pacing of what powerlifting or maybe even some power building at some point workouts feel like, there'll be more information about that coming out on Instagram announcing those live streams, so they can find me there.
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or Facebook. You can email me, max@jtsstrength, if you have questions about the online programming.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your newsfeed all day. This was the Jug Life Podcast. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Blessings.